I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Sarah Pascoe.
Hello, I'm Carrie Ad-Lloyd.
And we're weird about books.
We love to read.
We read too much.
We talk too much.
About the too much that we've read.
Which is why we've created
the Weirdos Book Club.
Join us!
A space for the lonely outsider to feel accepted and appreciated.
A place for the person who'd love to be in a real book club but doesn't like wine or nibbles.
Or being around other people.
Is that you? Join us.
Check out our Instagram at Sarah and Carrie Ad's Weirdos Book Club for the upcoming books we're going to be discussing.
You can read along
and share your opinions.
Or just skulk around in your raincoat like the weirdo you are.
Thank you for reading with us. We like reading with you. This week's book guest is Living My Best Life, Hun, by London Hughes.
What's it about? It's a rags-to-riches story. If the rags is being bullied by bitches in Thornton Heath, and the riches is fame, success, and, well, more riches.
What qualifies it for the Weirdos Book Club? Well, London's autobiography is how we found out she once had her own book club, the Roald Dogs. Need we say more? In this episode, we discuss bullying,
Babe Station,
Tony Blair,
Alan Carr,
LA,
and smooching your teddy bear. And joining us this week is London herself. We are so excited to have a very special guest book and guest this week, because this week we are not only, our guest book is London Hughes Living My Best Life, Hun, but our guest is London Hughes Who's Living Her Best Life, Hun.
Hey! Hi, ladies.
Hello.
Hey. It's lucky because Living Your Best Life, Hun, that's more like the end of the book, isn't it?
Literally.
Because there's a lot of stuff before Living Best Life.
Yeah, that's why I did it.
I was like, there's the other stuff that is very much on the path to living your best
life.
Oh, yeah.
But definitely en route.
Yeah. I see the picture of you on the front. You look so glamorous.
Stunning.
I know how well things are going for you. So I was like, this is a story of like LA life. And it's like, no, Thornton Heath.
It starts in Croydon. Oh
yes,
my God.
We're starting back there.
It's
yes.
So brilliant. It's so funny.
Thank you.
And it is so truthful.
We started this book group because we wanted to look at books that made people feel better about themselves. Mm. And that's what your book does massively.
Thank you.
Because you could have really missed some stuff out.
Oh my God. And there were stories where I wanted to message Sarah and be like, I can't believe she's put that in.
Wait, which one?
Okay, I'm going to tell you. Talking about being bullied, I think is amazing because many people were, you know, there's a whole spectrum of unpopular to like, you know, school is horrible.
Yes.
Yeah.
And when you're going through it, you think that's it forever.
Yes.
And that's who you are.
Yes.
So many people have a terrible time at school and then think, okay, that's why I want to do something with my life to prove that I'm not what they thought of me or that. So, but then when you're like getting off of your teddy bear.
Yes. Marcel.
Shout out to Marcel.
I like that he's a recurring character.
Yeah.
And but every time you don't even get a boyfriend, you're like, Marcel be so proud.
But that's not the low point of your romantic life, in my opinion. That's sitting on Tony Blair's lap.
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't believe this Tony Blair. One that you met him.
Yeah.
The bizarreness that you met him and then you formed a deep crush on him.
Met him because he
deep crush.
He picked you out of the crowd.
Out of a crowd.
I didn't know Tony Blair was that guy.
Yeah, we should say this is not, that sounds much worse
it
than
sounds
it.
So much worse than it. I was 11 years old.
It is worse. She was a child. It is worse.
No, he's celebrating a win, right?
Yes,
the win,
he just won.
Your mum was a massive Labour supporter.
Yes.
And the bus was coming through Croydon.
You had a little flag. I had a flag. I was doing a real good flag routine. I was really twirling them flags.
Even then, you knew, like, yes, you want to get picked, you got to
stand
it.
Out. Yeah. So I was twirling around these flags, and then as this bus was driving by, and everyone on top of the bus, all the MPs and Tony was just waving at everybody, and I just went in. I went in, flung up the flags in the air, caught them, span around, did a cartwheel. I went in, and then he just pointed at me and was like, "Come up." So me and my mum came on the bus, and
then you sat on his lap.
I sat on his lap, and he smelled like peaches. And just,
rich people smell really nice.
He smelled so good, man. Yeah. And I just was in love. I just was in love from then.
Is it because he was powerful?
I don't think I knew he was powerful at the time. Really? Because I was like, what year was it? I don't even know when he came. I was
97.
So I was 8. Yeah. I didn't really know what that meant. Yeah. I just was like, this man, this smiley, big-mouthed man.
He works for the buses.
Yeah, he's just so nice. Red is my favourite colour. Yeah. There's red everywhere. Yeah, I was just in awe of the moment. I was romanticising the moment.
Yeah,
if he'd have kissed me right there and then, I would have...
and so you're not
this
joking
be an exclusive
about having
podcast.
A crush on
no,
Tony
I had a
Blair.
Massive crush on
oh,
him.
I didn't think it was joking.
Yeah, no, it wasn't
it
joke.
Felt, I could feel it the was
I kept waiting for you to go, ah.
I felt it. I was
very
like,
real.
This is real. This
very
person.
Real.
Yeah. But lots of women did at the time.
Yeah, it was a... And I hated Cherie. Hated
yes,
her.
Yes, I thought it was very funny that you really...
More than Rochelle from the Saturdays?
More than Rochelle from the Saturdays. I had to apologise to Cherie. And listen, babes.
Shout out to Cherie.
She got so much hate from this little 8-year-old girl. Hated her.
Yeah.
Hated
I think
her.
A lot of the country wasn't that nice
yeah,
to Cherie.
Yeah, they wasn't.
Blair.
And I added in. I was part of it. Oh, and I'm sorry, Cherie. I just wanted your man. That's it.
But it weren't even like, oh, I think it's, you know, like her policies or the way she influences.
No.
She's a human rights lawyer.
Yeah, I know. I remember distinctively remember not liking her lipstick.
Wow. And it was red,
don't
probably.
Like her lipstick. Yeah, it was just red lipstick. And it was just remember like, eh, no, Cherie.
Yeah. So yeah.
I feel like that's... Do you think I should have left that out of the book?
No. You know, I'm a coward and a people pleaser.
Right.
So yeah, if I would edit certain things out because like, you're really honest. I really, really liked him. And then, you know, the Iraq war, we broke up. Whereas I would look back and go, I don't want people to think I like a man who started all this unrest in the Middle East and murdered people. So I'll say...
I didn't really like
I hated him from the minute he was elected.
Right, yeah. No, I loved him. Then Iraq, we fell out, we broke up, and I never spoke to him again.
But you said that you thought that Labour were really popular with black people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They are, I think.
Yeah.
No. What is England politics nowadays? What is this country?
It's very confusing.
It's very confusing. Yeah.
There's no one to fancy
there's
London.
There's no one to fancy.
Oh,
what's his name?
Keir Starmer. Come on.
Literally no one to fancy. It's like
you
it's
just
sit so
on Keir Starmer's lap.
No. Although I'm in a movie with Jeremy Corbyn.
Oh,
and I met him. It's out. It's called Some Otherhood. It's out very soon. And I met Jeremy.
It's called what? Some Otherhood.
Some Otherhood. Okay. Adam Deacon has a film. It's coming out in all cinemas.
Yeah.
It's called Some Otherhood.
Yeah.
And I'm in it with Jeremy Corbyn. And I met Jeremy Corbyn on the set. And he has a very silver fox sugar daddy vibe.
I can't believe you've fallen for another one.
I don't know what it is.
When there was the expenses scandal, do you remember all the politicians were claiming all that stuff?
Yes.
And they're like duck houses and all that. Jeremy Corbyn was the one who'd only charged for one printer cartridge. So there's things about him
for the balance, he definitely back in the day I would have called it inner swagger. That's when I like when a guy has inner swagger.
I know what you mean.
Jeremy Corbyn and Tony Blair
inner swagger
both have inner swagger. Keir Starmer, not so much.
Yeah,
I never met him.
You
do you know who also
it.
Has inner swagger? King Prince Charles.
Yeah.
That is definitely his name. King Prince Charles.
When did you meet King Prince Charles?
I did a Funny Woman gig for Armed Forces Day.
Oh, wow.
And King Prince Charles was there when he was a prince.
That's 100% his name. 100% staying as his name, King Prince Charles.
He made a beeline for me and he told me I was far too pretty to be a comedian.
Oh,
that's what my mum that's what my mum says to male comedians.
Really?
My mum met Tony Law in Edinburgh. I'd only ever heard Creepy Men saying it before. No offense, King Prince Charles.
Yeah.
But my mum said to Tony Law, I said, I'd just come out of Tony Law's show and I said to my mum, that's the show I saw. And she just looked him up and down and went, you're too handsome for a comedian.
See?
And then she did say that to Sean Walsh as well. Too handsome to be a comedian. And then she told me he looked like Mick Hucknall.
Oh, so
it was
God.
Like, it was like, give him with one hand, take away with the other.
It's like,
there's something that you two have in common.
Oh, yeah.
When I was reading, London, your description of sort of teaching yourself to dance, not just dance in general, but in a sexy way, in a way that's going to impress people at school.
Yes.
One person popped into my mind, and that was twerking Carrie Adlord.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Carrie does the kind of sexy dancing twerk, after half a Smirnoff Ice, which makes all the boys on the dance floor sit down.
Carrie Ad.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. I'm like the girl that climbs up on the podium.
Which is what London is.
What? Yeah.
Yes.
I know, you wouldn't expect it. I'm the girl that clears. I'm like, get.
Bit of Justin Timberlake comes on.
I need room.
You're going to do routine.
I'm up on the podium. I'm doing the routine.
Carrie Ad, why have we never gone out?
If there's a pole, it's a prop and I'm going.
Why have we never partied?
Exactly. I don't know. I'm not really a partier, but I'm an amazing dancer.
We've been at parties and you.
No, you haven't seen me dance at parties.
No, clearly not.
We would have been dancing.
You would have locked eyes across the dance floor.
Because
and
the same as you, like, if someone's dancing properly, you're like, thank God someone here is actually going to do 100%. This. 100%. Because the rest of these fuckers, what are they doing?
They're just going to stand there.
Go away.
Take up space.
Yes.
Stop taking up space.
But I can
That's
do
me
a
holding
head
my
flip.
Wine, literally. Doing a side to side. Doing a side to side.
No.
I don't need the alcohol.
No, I don't need that. Listen, I need the space.
I need the space.
The space.
And the good song. And I need the people to clear the way.
Clear the way.
And if you're coming towards this, you better be bringing it. Don't come to say, oh, this is fun.
No. Move out the way. Yeah. You're going to get kicked.
Kicked?
Yes.
Or hair flicked?
Yes.
Or, yeah.
You're going to be pissed off.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my hair's going to be in your drink.
At university, Carrie Ad would have neck injuries.
The next day.
Same.
From hair whipping.
Okay. Yeah. We see each other.
I see you. I got an acting job. From dancing at an Edinburgh party.
Look at that.
Because they, and then they.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it was Pappy's.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Pappy's, then they, but the agent rang and was like, oh, they want you to do this part. And I was like, oh, okay. And I read it and it said, oh, she's like really overly sexy dancing in a way that's like intimidating at this party. And then when I got to Glasgow to film it, they were like, can you just do exactly what you did at the Gilded Balloon party?
Oh, my God. How
and
did
you remember
feel?
You had denim hot pants? Can we get her in denim hot pants exactly like she
was playing Matt Crosby's sister, who's then dancing so sexually, it's embarrassing.
And it was complicated because obviously I was.
You felt like you were doing really well and killing it, and that was your moment. And they're like, dancing. How embarrassing, how intimidating.
Yeah.
Men!
But then it was quite funny because I think I can say this. Tom Parry had like really cracked his head.
Yes.
On the shoe, and they covered it up. They'd put makeup on, so we did it fine. Then I happened to finish the last episode. There was a rap party.
Yeah.
And so at the rap party, I started doing my dancing, which for me is normal dancing.
Normal.
And I went up to Tom and I was like, are you ready? And I gave him, you know, a bit of the proper dancing.
Yeah.
The kind of stuff that people charge for.
And my dancing was so good, his head started bleeding.
Oh my God.
And he was like, my head's bleeding. Stop it, Carrie, go away.
Oh my God. We would have complimented each other because I'm choreo. So I know the routine to every music video.
I'm improv.
I'll improv. But then chorus, whatever song from Beyonce to Liberty X.
You got it.
I've got the routine.
Do you know why? It's because the dweeb still lives within you.
The dweeb is within me.
The inner dweeb.
The dweebiest part of your book.
Oh,
please does have some dweeby bits.
Yeah, my book is very dweeby.
But you've written a book and you were once in a book club called The Rolled Dogs.
Yes.
Which made me feel adorable. Like this is the right space for you.
Oh, thank you.
Welcome to our book club.
Yeah, I love
you read
reading.
What's it called?
SEO trot.
Backwards.
Yeah. That to me was a new level.
New level.
You know what? Have you read SEO trot?
No.
SEO trot is backwards tortoise. Yeah. The word.
Yes.
And they read it backwards. That's mind blowing.
Yes.
Yeah.
So yeah.
So with school friends.
Yes.
Yeah. Was just you and Marcel.
When did the bullying begin?
I know. When did it start? I wonder why it started.
But
yeah.
I would have thought that was cool.
I thought it was cool. I don't know. Every summer holidays, it was like the book. There was like an incentive to read books. And like if you read 10 books in a week, you got this sticker and this badge and you had to work your way up.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I was part of that. But we were very competitive. So the Roll Dogs, we were just basically, basically meet together and then just outread every kid in the like surrounding areas so that we could be the top of the book table.
Yeah.
And we were.
Yeah.
Repeatedly. So like,
also I just think,
don't come for me.
What's implied in that, like, reading is so valuable in so many ways, but in terms of confidence, learning about other people's lives, but also vocabulary. You ended up writing.
Yes.
I know.
We weren't a book club. We were a library gang.
Oh, there's a difference. I'm sorry.
Okay. Library gang.
Yeah. You can rebrand that as much as you like.
I was in a gang, is what you're saying.
It was a gang. Yeah. It was a library gang, but it was a gang.
Was anyone scared of the library gang?
They should be. The thesaurus lot should have been scared of us.
I haven't even finished Matilda.
Literally. Bean bags. There's four bean bags. We had every one of them bean bags.
That's priority.
Yeah. We had that whole corner next to the dictionaries.
I believe you.
Thank you.
Writing, that's what I thought was amazing about this book, of like how much writing you were doing, right? Even from the beginning, like rewriting episodes of Frasier and Fresh Prince, which again, we're the similar generation where that was like everything. The things that were available to us and seeing those American comedies.
I loved them.
I didn't then go and write an episode of it. I was just imagine meeting them. Like, but you were like, this is my world.
But obviously that came as well because we wouldn't have the thing of watching it going, all of these characters are white. If I dream of being in this, I would have to
write it,
invent
and make it. Yeah.
Yeah. You said you were going to be Daphne's adopted.
So in Frasier.
Yeah. Because I thought that was a good storyline.
Thank you. So in Frasier, it was lacking the black people, let's be very clear.
Yeah.
And so my character was Frasier's adopted daughter, Denise. Yes. And so because I'm British and very smart, Frasier would use me to help him get the ladies. Yes. And I would in turn like end up dating their sons.
And it would be good. So we would have good rapport. That would have
been
good. Exactly. British people together.
And it was fun. Like it was something that I just did for fun. Whereas with the Fresh Prince, I actively was like, let me help them out because I want to be on this show. And so like even when I'm thinking about like being on a show, I'm like, let me write myself in it so they don't have to.
So I wrote it out
by hand. I gave myself a three-part episode arc. Only three episodes because it was Easter holidays.
Yeah.
And so I only had 2 weeks. So I knew I couldn't fit in the full season.
Three
episodes. I wrote it out by hand and my character, which in hindsight wouldn't have worked because the age difference. But in my mind, my character was Ashley, Will's little sister. I was her English tutor and I had like a little love interest, which was Will. And we had this on again, off again relationship.
Which she often did with girls who were connected to Ashley, who were like more clever, nice girls. Right. Not the girls that he had found.
Right, but at the time I'm like 11. So really.
Not cool.
He was 17 in the show. Not sure it would have worked.
No.
But we decided to break up because Ashley's education comes first.
Yeah. Which is such a Fresh Prince storyline.
Thank you.
But also they would have been like, no, that's it. And you would have walked out and you would have done that thing with you had the goodbye scene at the door.
Yes.
And you would have had your book.
Yes.
And he would like
look back once and walk away.
See you later. And then you'd have closed.
Bye, Will.
And then Jazzy Jeff would have come on the punchline.
100%.
Yeah. But I'm astonished that an 11-year-old has the wisdom to go, her education comes first.
Yes. What do you mean?
Yeah.
11-year-old that's part of the library gang.
Yeah.
Roll dogs.
But what I think is also interesting, which comes across in your career, is that like I watched those shows and love them, and I didn't have anybody, like none of my family in this show business at all. So I was just like, that's telly. Telly's over there. Goodbye, telly. Not for me. But that you were like, no, I'm getting into that television. Yes. Like, I think that's so impressive.
I feel like, I don't know where it came from.
Yeah.
Because I just always remember thinking I'm running out of time. And I remember thinking that.
Even at 11.
Yeah, because Britney Spears made it at 12 and a half. No, at 12 on Mickey Mouse Club.
Mickey Mouse Club, I remember thinking
like, she's on Mickey Mouse Club from 12. Her, Justin Timberlake, Christina Aguilera, they're all on the Mickey Mouse Club. I'm not on the Mickey Mouse Club. I'm in Fulton Heath. I haven't even been on Barney. What are we doing, mum and dad? How are we helping my career? And they were just like, no. And I was just like, how? And I just thought that like, I just have to do this myself. And so whether it was trying to climb in the television when I was 5, trying to get the news to come to my house because I wanted to be on TV. So I'd be like making up things. I tried to start a fire. It didn't work. Like little things.
Fire is the word that comes to mind when you're describing this. It's like a battery.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, people always ask, like, what advice would you give to people who, you know, maybe don't know their way into an industry? That is what you need. First of all, before anything else, a bit of delusion.
100%.
Yeah.
And just enough of a fire that when people keep saying no to you, because they will, no matter how talented or beautiful or good at singing you are, everyone will mostly say no.
Yeah, yeah.
And the fire just goes, zoop.
Yeah.
That's that rejection letter. Vroom, vroom.
Yeah. Literally. Even like calling up because my parents didn't know how to get into the business and they did not care. And I went and got the Yellow Pages and looked for an agent in the Yellow Pages and found an estate agent and called up Foxtons and Bestowe.
There are worse agents out there.
Right. And I asked them for representation and I got my number blocked, my mum's number blocked.
Oh, I love that story. Yeah, when Foxtons were like, don't call us anymore.
I'm sad that someone at Foxtons didn't go, what am I doing at Foxtons? I could be managing this girl.
Literally.
Like, come on. Like, yeah. This is a good team. I'm good at selling. She's got the vibe.
My thing was always, all they have to do is notice me and they will see. And the thing is, even though it sounds delusional at the age of 10, 9, 8, whatever, it actually happened.
Yeah, it's true. Like, but that's what I mean. If you keep doing it, you can sort of bulldoze the world.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, who's stronger?
Yeah.
Me and my will.
Exactly.
Or you and your nose.
Yeah.
So let's go through some of the jobs you've had.
Oh my God, let's go.
Should we start with Babe Station?
Yeah.
Babe Station.
Because I had no idea you'd done that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's so impressive. Because essentially you're saying, like, it's just you and a tripod and your computer.
Yeah.
Yeah, back in the day.
People.
Yeah. Before it was.
Yeah. And, like, and daytime is
less stress
integral.
That. Yeah. Yeah. So for me, TV's TV. Whether it's, whether it's Babe Station or CBBC. TV's TV.
Yeah.
So my first telly job, I was in music videos, like UK rap music videos, just looking pretty in the background.
They weren't calling me. I don't know.
They weren't. They should have been with the moves that you had.
Should have been. No, you. Enya
called you once.
Enya.
I can do Enya.
Not input. Enya.
I could. I'd do it. Hey. Dance is dancing.
No,
dance
carry on. Dancing. Me and you need to hit some club. Listen, I don't care that you've got kids now. We're doing it.
Yeah, as long as there's one that opens at 4 p.m. You can get over at 6:30.
Yeah, you've got things to do.
Do you have a hot chocolate?
Well, essentially, I just was like, I was background in these music videos and I would, during the, like, between the scenes, I would be making everybody laugh. And one of the girls who was also background in the music video was like, would you ever do TV work, like presenting? And I was like, what?
Yes.
Yes. I like just turned 18. I was like, yes, please. And she was like, okay, well, there's this this show, it's called Flirt UK. I didn't know it was called Babes. She was like, it's called Flirt UK and it's £20 an hour and it's live TV. I was like, yes, yes, yes. And it was in the QVC building.
Oh, wow.
So I go to the QVC building like, oh my God, I'm about to like live my best life. I'm going to be on live television. And I just see these Babe Station signs everywhere. Mm-hmm. And then I go in and she tells me to come and watch her do what she does, and like essentially she's like in a tight little top in front of a camera fully clothed just talking, and then like it gets to like 11 p.m. and she leaves and these girls with like lingerie just replace her and get their tits out and start fingering themselves, and I'm like, oh, but TV's TV.
Yeah, TV's
so,
TV.
I'm gonna do this.
Yeah.
And so essentially,
and daytime.
And £20 an hour
was a lot of money.
That's
in
huge.
2007.
Yes, I'm thinking about the jobs that we used to do. Like
for £4 an hour was what I was getting when I was 16 working in Primark.
Yeah.
So £20 an hour was insane.
Yeah, that's huge.
And then essentially, it was back when you could text through the TV. So it would be like a screen and it had like a rolling chat at the bottom, me in the top, being like, hi guys, you're watching Flirt UK with me, London Hughes. If you want to flirt through the TV, you know what to do. And they would text in.
You could still do that job.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And they would text in and be like, hey, this is Roy. Roy likes redheads. Hey, Roy, if you're into a bit of Roy, text in. And they would text in.
And also, you're a very sex positive person.
Yes.
That becomes so clear in your book.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not like you're faking something.
No.
You're not scared of the fact that the men are aroused or fancy people.
Well, I was naive because I would be making funny bits. I had a thing called Hughes' Shoes where I talk about, like, someone was like, show us what shoes. And I was like, okay.
Oh, you didn't know they were
kinky.
Didn't
know it was a fetish. And then our viewers, and my producer was like, we've had the most viewers in since for daytime.
They were all texting each other. She's showing her shoes.
Yeah, Hughes' Shoes was a thing. And I would tell stories about dates I'd been on with guys and people would find it funny. And it really helped. I didn't know I wanted to be a stand-up. I wasn't
basically
a stand-up then.
Yeah,
it was my early stand-up days.
Yeah.
Early. And I had no idea.
Because you're figuring out that relationship of your voice and a camera.
Yeah.
And why not do that on Babe Station?
Is that in the daytime?
Yeah, in the daytime. In the daytime.
What's inspiring for people to listen is, look, you will read some autobiographies that people went to RADA and then went to Broadway and then went into the movies.
Oh my God, yeah.
But actually most people have a journey that's sort of like yours,
where
it's like you say yes to a lot of things.
Everything.
And then you look back and go, wow, I learned that then.
Yeah.
Or that was depressing. I didn't think I was doing what I wanted to do, but it really prepared me for this later
100%.
On.
It reminded me of when I met you, because we met at university.
I love this.
And I was very much of the, like, if they say no, okay, sorry, I'm so sorry I bothered you, I'm going to go away and live on a rock.
Right.
And I had no fire. And then Sarah would just be like, well, we'll just get jobs as tour guides because it's basically performing.
Yeah.
And I was like,
and
what?
And also performing, with, like, because again, we would be stuck in traffic, sort of, we'd run out of history and you'd be going, and on your left, there's a pret-a-manger or a postbox
exactly.
or just something. And when I found stand-up, I was like, I am used to talking for 2.5 hours yeah. at a time
about
on a microphone.
Nothing.
Yeah,
about nothing.
And not being scared when I don't have anything anymore.
This is
your
the
mouth
thing.
Keeps moving.
This is the thing. Yeah. And Babe Station doing live TV
yeah,
prepared me for doing live TV on CBBC.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Same skills. People are like, how? I'm like, same skills. It's I just didn't have a puppet. Yeah. But same.
Although you could have had a puppet. Sexy puppet.
I could have had a sexy puppet.
Yeah.
But same skills.
I think a very similar thing you then did when you did stand-in work.
Yeah.
For Alan Carr's show, film a panel show. They get people to sit in your chair beforehand with a sticker on saying they're you.
Yeah.
And people like London are rare, but it does happen where someone sees it as an audition. Yeah. It is a TV show. The producers are watching. The host is sometimes there. Mm-hmm. You had lots of interaction with Alan.
Yeah.
And
I love that moment that you then see him years later at some like fancy do and he's like, babe!
But he completely remembered me. I couldn't believe it.
But of course, because you made him laugh.
Yeah.
And he was like checking with you what jokes he should do.
Literally. Yeah. I was like, yeah, again, doing...
You were 18.
18, doing television studies at university. Yeah. Got this opportunity in email from Open Mic Productions looking for stand-ins on a TV show. Didn't know what it was. It turned out it was Alan Carr's Celebrity Ding Dong. Got to film it at the BBC.
Yeah.
Got to go into the BBC, have lunch there, sit there, pretend to be Carol Vorderman. Like, watch Alan Carr rehearse and go through jokes. And then after a while, because I was there, it was like 6 weeks. So I was there every week. And after a while, Alan would be like, London, what do you think of this one? Do I do this one or this one? And I'd be like, Alan Carr's asking me comedy advice.
But again, that's such a testament to you. Because
he's not being he's a really nice person.
No, he is lovely. But also the fact that other people would have gone, oh, I'm not important. I'm the lowest person here. Therefore, I feel like shit. Whereas you were like, opportunity.
Opportunity. Or you think you don't deserve to be somewhere. Yeah. You think, oh, I don't want anyone here to think I'm arrogant about myself or want something I shouldn't have yet.
Oh, it's so too tempting. I want this so badly. So I'm just going to like shut down because I'm so close. But your attitude to be like, everything is a possibility.
Yeah.
But that's amazing. Not everyone has that attitude.
Really? That's just how I saw it. I was like, I was watching everything. I was watching the floor runner, the producer. I was watching what everybody did, the director, where the cameras went. And then I got to sit in the audience afterwards. So I'd watch the show back and like I would see where things worked well in rehearsal, didn't go down in
it's
real
life.
It's
like a workshop,
life.
Isn't it?
Really was.
But this is where dweeb meets stardom.
Yeah.
Because that is what a dweeb does, what an intelligent person does. I should stop saying dweeb.
Because you're including yourself in the dweeb.
Yes,
we are also
all
dweeb.
It's part of the approach. It's not, I think people think someone else will come into your life and pluck you out.
And
that's so rare. It's more often someone going, I'm doing 110% more work.
Yes.
Than someone else is thinking, if I want to be there, then I need to know the rest of this stuff.
Yeah.
You're really, really open about things like Edinburgh and Edinburghs that would be considered failures.
Because obviously we've all done Edinburgh. Yeah.
And when people get to know you once you're successful, they're really surprised to hear this Edinburgh that's just gone. There was a girl, I don't know if you saw on Twitter, but like she did her show to one person.
Yeah.
And
she tweeted.
And she cried.
And she cried.
And what I loved was the response of people like Dara.
Yeah, it was lovely.
Flights of the Conchords, Jermaine, saying to someone, that's what I had, because they don't see that bit.
I said it. I was like, babe, that was me on 2017. Yeah. And then 2 years later, I got nominated for Best Show. Yeah. That was, we've all had that Edinburgh.
And no one saw it because there was no one there.
Literally. Literally.
So you have to tell them retrospectively, by the way, that was most people's path. Those Edinburghs. And literally going, I can't afford to come again. And I don't think I've got the confidence to do this to myself again.
It destroys you.
So you went, so you did, three times.
I thought it's three times. And it's really interesting that you've put that in. Because again, if you don't know Edinburgh, but you like comedy or are thinking about getting into it, seeing the messy path that it takes.
Yes.
So you have that first Edinburgh, which is pretty classic Edinburgh.
Yes.
No, funny, weird venue.
Yes.
Tiny, sharing it with, the telly in the background, this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
No one really sees
curtains
it.
Curtains for
Banshee
walls.
Labyrinth, Nidri Street, cinema room.
Shout out to Banshee Labyrinth.
Wow, yes.
And then you had the second one where you were like, right,
Expensive one.
Yeah, 15 grand. Yeah.
Which people, again, are shocked in the audience because the audience, they do the maths of Edinburgh and think everyone's making 30 grand.
It's crazy.
Yeah. It's like no one's making money.
No one. No one.
I want a little shout out because it made me laugh so much that you've name checked him.
Oh yeah, we love this.
Ryan. But you've name checked Ryan from
Ryan
the
Pleasants.
Which I just was imagining because you know you're very successful
at
LA.
One of the gatekeepers in comedy.
In British comedy, like he runs the Pleasants, he books the comedy section.
He also like Just for Laughs in Montreal. Yeah. He's on the judging panel. And
I've known him, I've known Ryan for an extremely long time.
Yeah.
And it just made me laugh so much. I'm imagining like Jamila Jamil or like Kevin Hart being like Ryan from the Pleasants. And me being like, how funny that everyone's going to know him. We, myself and Sarah, like, shout out to Ryan. We both have the same Ryan story that he didn't get back to us.
Wow.
He did get back to me and said he didn't understand what all the fuss was about.
Oh, wow.
So when you said you were rejected by Ryan from the Pleasants, I wanted to be like, London.
Can we be in the library gang?
Yeah. Literally. But then he then ate his words.
Yeah.
And now he said, I have made him rethink how he treats new talent. Credit to Ryan.
I just thought it was funny that we're all in the same gang of like, Ryan, please can we be at the Pleasant? Please.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll see you in 2 years' time.
And again, the important lesson is that people who tell you no don't know better than you.
No, they don't. Yeah.
Sometimes you know better.
Or it doesn't. I think again, when you're starting comedy, it's like, oh, well, if I don't get the Pleasants, that equals I'm shit.
Yeah.
And not being like, no, it's a no for now.
You believe it's
a no for now.
You believe
like,
it's a meritocracy, but it's not a science.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
You are both Geminis.
Okay, but I was going to say, so.
This comes up a lot on the show. We've had a lot of Geminis on the show.
I was really excited when I read that the Big Brother audition and 70% of the people were Geminis.
Yeah. When you said, I'm not sure I believe in star sign traits, but what I do know is I'm a Gemini and I like to speak my mind. Other true speaking Geminis include Kanye West and Donald Trump. Make of that what you will.
Yeah. When I was defending Geminis to Monica Heisey, I used Naomi Campbell and Katie Price.
Yeah.
But it's all the same. Yeah. It's the same library gang.
It's all the same. Same
all the same library gang.
I'm not in
all
that
same library gang.
I sometimes wish I could be more like that because I'm much more pessimistic about
things. I know people that are like, I'm never going to achieve anything. Mm.
Yeah.
And they don't.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Regardless of whatever they are.
Yeah.
So I just always been like, why would I say it's not going to happen?
So there's a part of it that can sound like magical thinking.
Yeah. Yes.
Which is like, oh, just imagining the end point. But a lot of it's thinking about the path.
Mm.
To get there, actually what you're opening your mind to is, well, that would have to go right and I'd have to get that. And do you know what? I'm going to have to actually make myself email that person or speak to that person
what
at
I think
a party
you both do is taking yourself very seriously. Mm. And I mean, you take your talent very seriously and there's not a doubt. It's like, I know I can do this. So how do I get from A
to B?
Should
I tell you what actually I think helped me? And I don't know if it's the same with your parents, but it might be. Was having parents who don't take you seriously.
Yes.
Because the fact that they don't care, you don't have any sort of pressure of a parent going, oh, yes, if you work hard at school or, oh, you were very good in that school play. When they're just like oblivious to it.
Oblivious.
No one is changing your seven-year-old thing of like, I think I will be on the TV.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay,
yeah.
Maybe.
Because nobody was telling me I couldn't. No one was telling me I could.
No.
So I was just doing me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like literally.
If no one's like really listening to what you're saying.
No.
It's like you're just saying it.
Yeah.
But no one is saying, that's very unrealistic.
Sarah. No one was telling me I couldn't do it. And even like the beginning of the book starts with pop star training.
Mm. Oh,
like,
yeah, that's
I'm
amazing.
Like literally training for this thing that I know is going to happen that my mum probably just thought, oh, Landa's dancing to Spice Girls again. She's been dancing to this song nonstop for an hour. What's she doing? In my head, I'm like, I need to be prepared. So if I meet the Spice Girls and they ask me to do choreo, I need to know the choreo to If You Want to Be My Lover so I can do it. And they might make me the sixth Spice Girl. Well, like,
so that's the thing. I never went to a Spice Girls concert, but if I had have done.
She's the take that era.
No matter how far back I was in the stadium, I would have been standing behind 50,000 people thinking they could see me.
100%.
But you find that about Take That. You thought they heard her sing, you were ready with the harmonies, right?
Yes. But that's the same with writing for the thing for Will Smith, because in case Will Smith wanted me to be on the show, here's the character, here's the script. It's just being ready. We're just prepared.
Yeah, I think that's what I mean, but you're taking it seriously. Whereas I think most kids or people who maybe want to be performers, it's like, oh, that's mad. Whereas you're like, no, I'm ready. Because there's a percentage of your brain that's like, when I meet Will Smith. How would that happen? You're like, no. When Take That call me on stage?
But the thing
when
is,
the Spice Girls
I have met
me?
Will Smith. So it's like, why would I not?
So let's jump to like America now.
Okay.
Because as you say, you're in Fleabag.
Yes.
Which is very, very cool.
That was very cool.
And then you went out with Cara Delevingne and Phoebe Waller-Bridge.
Yes.
But hearing those kind of stories, that is why you pick up someone's autobiography.
Yeah.
Because you want them to be getting drunk with people you admire and think are beautiful.
Yes. Yeah. That was crazy.
I like that it's what you expect. Like when you're little and you're like, oh, in TV, that's what happens. And you start to live the life that you expect. Was often people say to you, oh, it's not like that. I go home at four and it's nothing like that.
People
like,
told me that about LA. They were like, oh, you're not going to go to LA and have anything fabulous happen to you. It's Los Angeles, babe. Mm. Like, it's not that like that for everybody.
Yeah.
Okay. The book starts with me at Dave Chappelle's house.
Yes, of course. And you did an Edinburgh show that became a Kevin Hart produced Netflix special. So what was the, please tell me that journey.
Edinburgh 2019.
People would get your pens and pencils.
Yeah. Edinburgh 2019 was a crazy time. Mm-hmm. It was a time where I'd already been having meetings in LA. So I already had my foot, one of my legs out the door. I was like, it was just, I did it for 2017 me.
Yeah.
Because that show in 2017, Superstars, just nobody's realised it, was the worst show I've ever done.
But also in that show, you did talk about the fact that Britain is shit with black talent.
Yes, the show was all about me wanting to be Britain's answer to Whoopi Goldberg and then realising that it will never have an answer to Whoopi Goldberg because systemic racism. Yeah. So that was the show.
No one's asking the question, where's Whoopi Goldberg?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Nobody, they don't want black
women to... But if you think of the age of Whoopi, it's like, well, we should have had an equal person by this point already.
But Britain doesn't even have a British Beyonce or a British Oprah. So why would they have a British Whoopi? And I remember leaving and being like, I need to do Edinburgh one last time for that girl before I leave and go to America. I'd already been signed with UTA, which were a big agency.
Yeah, huge.
They also represent Kevin Hart. I'd never met Kevin Hart. Kevin Hart doesn't know I exist at this point. Thank God Phoebe Waller-Bridge did Fleabag because the year before I went to Edinburgh, Fleabag won every Emmy.
Yeah.
So Fleabag had won 50,000 Emmys, and all the Americans knew is that this Edinburgh Festival is where Fleabag started in 2012.
Oh, wow. And you're able to be like, oh, Fleabag, I'm in it.
And I'm also in Fleabag episode 3, I'm a sex shop worker. So I'm like, okay, all of now LA, who wasn't interested in Edinburgh as so much before, because of the Phoebe Waller-Bridge effect, they were now looking for their next Phoebe Waller-Bridge in Edinburgh. So they had their eyes on Edinburgh more than ever before.
And I want to just add, as a DVD extra, that you got the part in Fleabag because you'd auditioned for Crashing, her other show, and hadn't got it. So shout out to thinking, oh, I didn't get a part and therefore nothing good happens, that people do remember you. And then she cast you in Fleabag from that.
I think she wrote the part in Fleabag for me, she said, because she remembered my audition being so funny and sexual that she wrote a funny, sexy part for me in the show and gave it to me. So essentially, that show's won 50,000 Emmys. Everyone's looking for the next middle-class white woman that talks about sex. And that's the year I'm like, fuck this industry. I'm going to America anyway. I'm going to do the show I want. And the show I want is called To Catch a Dick. And so like, at that time, I'd just done Celebs Go Dating in Britain. Yeah. So I had 40,000 Instagram followers, which meant Ryan from The Pleasants took me seriously as a performer. So I
The dream.
This show was just me and a mic and dick jokes. And I was like, let's go. I don't give a damn if no one comes. I'm doing it. for me.
Yeah.
And that's the show that sold out. That's the show that literally sold out day two, that Lupita Nyong'o flew from LA to go and see, that my agent was turning away Netflix to fit in HBO, HBO to fit, like it was crazy. And it was all a buzz. So my agents in America were like, everybody wants to see this show. We don't have, how can we, they, you know, they want to fly, but they can't get in. People are flying from LA to see the
show. Guys, you need to email Ryan at the Pleasance.
And someone filmed, BBC were going to do a documentary about Lenny Henry, and Lenny wanted me in, Lenny had come to the show three times, and Lenny wanted me in the documentary, and Lenny got the BBC to film me performing the show, and I didn't have any footage of me performing it. And so mid-festival, we have this footage, raw footage of me performing it, and like my team are like, Kevin Hart has requested to see it.
Oh my God.
And it was London, like,
I'm going to stop you here, because even before this point, how did that feel?
It was like
the people being desperate to come
it
in.
It was crazy. I was,
especially after those Edinburghs, when you've had bad Edinburghs and you have a good Edinburgh, people, it's like you've been punched in the face by someone.
Yeah.
And now they're like kissing you and you're like, literally, what's happening?
You know what? I was really sad because in 2017, me, even though I felt like shit, I didn't feel like shit because I didn't know how good it could be. So knowing how good it was made me feel even worse for 20s. I was like, oh, I really had a shit Edinburgh. Mm. Like, I had the worst. Mm. And this raw footage of me doing stand-up.
Kevin Hart
Kevin wants to see it. He watched it and was like, she's going to be a star. I need to meet her. Wow. So he flew me to Las Vegas to meet her.
So when you hear, so when you hear, someone like Kevin Hart has said that about you, do you just think, of course he thinks that it's true, or is it very exciting?
I was like, I was right. I was like,
you're like, Tony Blair knew it, Jeremy Corbyn knows.
But this is the thing, like, the thing is, this is why I can't live in this country anymore.
Yeah.
Because it's like it's like I've been gaslit.
Yeah.
Imagine being told, like, I was told by every producer that I didn't have what it takes. Mm. I was a niche. Our audience wouldn't get her. Oh, she's, oh no, London Hughes, she's too loud. London Hughes, oh, she does black dress. Oh, London Hughes, she's vulgar. La 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 la. For 10 years.
Yeah.
And I only had me being like, they are wrong. London,
but you didn't. You did know, like, you won Funny Women, so you did know that some people got it, audiences got it. Your gigs were amazing.
Yes,
it was the establishment.
Yeah, it was when I won Funny Women, which was 2009. I'd been doing stand up for 3 months, and I won this competition. I'd do a gig and kill it, and then I, you know, the producers would be talking to the white dudes and not me, and I'd be like, oh, they're gonna come over to me eventually, and they just wouldn't. And I remember just being like, what do I have to do to get these people to see that, like, I'm worth something?
Yeah.
And they just was like, nah. And it was always nah. Yeah. And like, when I won Funny Women, my interview with the South London Press is so delusional. My auntie has it framed. And it's basically me going, well, this is what I did in 3 months. So imagine what I could do in a year. I will have TV shows, movies, da-di-da. Because I was taught that if you work hard and you're a nice person and you're talented, things will happen for you.
Boom.
So I was
open.
Like, I'm clearly talented. I've won this competition. I work really hard and I'm a nice person. Boom. Yeah. I didn't take into consideration I'm a black woman in Britain in 2008.
And you're definitely right as when you look at other people's timelines.
Yeah.
So when you look at people, like you said, who like suddenly are on Mock the Week instantly.
Literally.
And are like getting known.
Sorry.
But this is the thing. Like,
men. I was talking about men.
It was just, it's just men. All men. I remember like Ramesh. I remember I saw Ramesh in Edinburgh and he did a half an hour show and I was like, that guy's talented. Mm. And at the time I had a Radio 4 pilot and like I begged them to have Ramesh in the pilot and they were like, who is he? We don't really know. I was like, I wrote this part for him.
Yeah.
He's great. And he got the part and we did the pilot and it was me, Ramesh, Gráinne Maguire, Humphrey Kerr, and it aired on BBC Radio 4. It didn't get a series.
Yeah.
And then like, Ramesh went on to be Ramesh Ranganathan and I was still in the same situation that I was when I was begging him to be on the show. And I was like, my mum would be like, how comes, because he played Adnan in my show, mum would be like, how comes Adnan is a host? I'm like, his name's Ramesh. And he's a famous comic now in Britain.
Yeah.
And like, I just remember watching everyone, everyone I knew who was a guy, regardless of race, like just glow up.
Yeah.
They would be like, Joe Lycett, Josh Widdicombe, like everyone became a thing. And I'm from that same era, and I remember doing 8 out of 10 cats trials, as you know, like how how much work they make you do just to rehearse and audition for this. And I remember just killing my auditions. And Josh, me and Josh was like, it was me, Josh Whittaker, can't remember who else it was. And Josh turned to me and was like, you killed it, mate. You've got this. And then Josh got asked to be on the show and I didn't. And we were messaging each other and he was like, they'll call you. They'll call you to be on the show because you killed
it. Oh, bless
Josh. And like, it didn't happen. Yeah. And it was just like, what? And so when America... just saw when Kevin Hart, one of the biggest comedians in the world, worth $500 million.
Yeah. See,
so raw footage.
You need to introduce us to Kevin Hart.
I will come
see
to
if
LA.
See if he wants a book podcast.
Literally, he has every. He's taken over
How
the world.
How does he feel about dancing?
He loves dancing. Good. He's a very good dancer. Oh, but this is the thing: if he sees the talent in me, he doesn't know me. He doesn't owe me anything. He's not even from my country, and he's like, yeah. I see it. I was like, then were you guys all blind?
No, I think it's an attitude as well. And I think what you have, I can, having been to LA, it totally fits that world in the way that here, like people do get so funny. When I went to LA, it was awful. It was awful. But I came back with an LA attitude because you have to have it out there. So I came back and I was like very confident about auditions because you're going all the time and you just get really into it.
You'd been taught how to sell yourself. Oh, because there's no point flying to LA and then going in there as a British person. Going,
so
well,
many
I don't
people
know.
Ruin it. I their chances it. By being humble I and was British.
Humble. I was humble and British. And I had unbelievably terrible auditions that I should one day write down because they were so bad. Oh, but by the end of it, I'd figured out, people had spoken to me and said, you have to stop apologising and you walk in. So then I came back here and my agent was like, oh, you got casting. And I went in LA version because I'd been back a week and I was so confident. I was like, oh, hi, Nettie. And there was four men and they were recoiling. They were like, wow, okay, well,
you'd made a
do you
pilot.
Want to just sit down?
You'd made a pilot on BBC Three.
I had the pilot, yeah.
And she said to them, did you watch my pilot? Which is what you would do in America.
In LA, because I had it in America. I'd be like, oh, I made something, don't worry about it, it's not a big deal. You probably shouldn't see it, it wasn't very good. It didn't prove. And they were so funny to me and they were so... like shitty and edgy because I thought, oh, I see, I have to go back to being British.
Oh,
like,
wow.
I was like, oh, I've come in LA version and now I need to drop
so
all that.
So is that
like,
what I've done wrong? I've just been American this whole time.
You've been American this whole time.
Oh, no.
Particularly here, which you mentioned in the book, it is systematically racist and very threatened by confidence.
Which is the same. Yes. It really is a reflection of the school bullies, which you acknowledge.
Yeah.
Why would a 14-year-old girl have a problem with another 14-year-old girl? Usually because it makes her feel bad about herself. There's something about them that you know makes 100%. Them feel insecure. Da, 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 da. And I think that's what happened to our industry. Our industry has changed. And it's not fixed completely.
Is it?
No, yeah. it's got better. But that doesn't mean that I can say... Oh no, the people who should be getting really huge opportunities are getting them. It's just that they actually realise that comedy only flourishes if it's not homogenous.
Right.
Like, and in every way there needs to be difference and diversity.
Yeah,
and
it's changing. It's slow and it's too slow. And you are dealing with a country. I mean, obviously America has its problems, but it is systematically racist in a very particularly British way.
Yeah. I did an interview recently and they were like, why don't you just stay and try and, why did you leave?
Why should you?
And I'm like, don't you want better for me? Yeah. Like in LA, I feel very fabulous. Like in LA, people say good morning to me.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. I'm appreciating that I have British privilege in America. So when I speak and they hear my accent, they're like, oh, she's British. I am celebrated anyway for being British, but then I'm also celebrated for my talent even more.
Yeah.
I am a comedian. That is a thing out there. Like, you're a comic. You perform at the Comedy Store. You have a Netflix special. Oh, wow. Here, I come back.
Who do you think you are?
Exactly. I can't even get booked on certain things still here. Like, when I get booked on things in the UK, they still try and give me the rate, like the mid rate or the lower rate. And I'm like, no, there's only four British comics that have a Netflix special and I'm one of them.
Yeah.
So I need the high rate. But they're like, yeah, but you're still a black girl. So diverse is like, this is what I say. I feel like Britain still thinks like we should have it.
Yeah.
Not that they want it though.
Like the whole book is just a giant fuck you to everybody who said that.
Yes.
And it's nice
but it's not
that you
fuck
get,
you because it's not,
no, not fuck
it's not
you.
Angry.
No, it's not. But it is, it's what I mean is like, I'm really glad that you have all this evidence to be like, you reason, were wrong. Because some people don't get the evidence.
No. Yeah. The reason I say, even angry, because you know like Alan Partridge has that, and that's why I had the last laugh.
Yeah.
It's not, the book isn't that.
No, yeah.
It's actually just you enduring your own journey.
Yeah.
Remembering some of those things.
Yeah. And that's why I put so much failure in the book.
But you shouldn't it's sad that you have to leave the country you were born in.
Exactly.
Because you can't make the programs like,
that I want.
Live near your mum.
Yeah.
You know, like that is... Because I think we celebrate it a bit. Like, well, LA exists. No, that's wonderful.
But also, but England misses out. I know that we have TV from all over the world, but there are countries that are making really incredible comedy. And that used to be us.
Britain was seen as like, we are the comedy connoisseurs. And the people now in charge have ruined that. And I do think that it's sad looking back on it that, you know, I never got a TV show here. Like, and now I have one now coming out, but it's just Kevin Hart produced it. But it's just like, I had to go to America to get it.
We normally do a last line. So you quote a Brené Brown quote, which I think is such a brilliant quote anyway, but what you said afterwards made me laugh, which is, that night I remembered the famous Brené Brown quote, "If you're not in the arena getting your ass kicked, I'm not interested in your feedback. Yeah, babes, I listen to your opinions once you've walked a mile in my inflatable duck costume." I just think like that sums up what you've been through and where you're going, of like, you have done some insane and crazy jobs that have only enriched and enhanced your experience.
Yes.
And that's why you don't need to hear anybody's feedback.
I don't need to hear anybody's feedback, truly. Yeah. I don't care what you think of me, I'm a queen.
There we go. That's our line. That's our line. London, thank you so much.
This has been lovely.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Weirdos Book Club.
You can find London on Instagram at The London Hughes, and her book, Living My Best Life, Hun, is available to buy now in all brilliant bookshops. Go and get it.
Next week's book guest is Persuasion by Jane Austen.
Can we persuade you to listen? Sarah's book, Weirdo, is available to buy now, as is my book. You're not alone.
Thank you for reading with us.
We like reading with you.
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Lucy Beaumont.
And guess what? I'm Sam Campbell.
If you've enjoyed this podcast, you might enjoy our podcast. It's called Lucy and Sam's Perfect Brains.
We have a podcast and it might be, I probably don't want to sound, you know, like I'm bragging, but it's dynamite. It is electric. It's high voltage. And please, we really need you to listen. You don't understand how much we need this.
Is it on all the platforms?
Oh, it absolutely is. But this one's out now. Lucy and Sam's Perfect Brains.